Have you been struggling with the new normal we are navigating ourselves through? Are you feeling drained from all the precautions we must take and cannot find time to pause and reset? Is it hard for you to find the time and ways to release stress? If any of this resonates with you, then you're in the right place. I will be sharing bite-sized tips on the practice of breath, meditation, and how to make lifestyle changes to help you find peace and joy in every moment of your daily life practice. Hi, I'm your host, Madhavi, and I help people eliminate physical and mental stress to reach their lifestyle goals through the practice of yoga and wellness coaching. I'm a healthcare worker, a yoga teacher, a yoga coach, and a lifestyle and wellness coach. I invite you to join me on this journey to better health and wellness. After all, you have nothing to lose but only stress. Welcome to Living Healthy, Living Well, bite-sized daily thoughts on the how to move through life practice with effort and ease, sharing ways on how to create space and accessibility for self-care and how to find ways of taking even just a moment to pause, understanding that there is more to health and wellness. It is a lifestyle that includes more than just diet and exercise. A healthy and prosperous lifestyle does not have to be stressful. You have the tools within you to lead the way to reach your goals. Helping people eliminate physical and mental stress is what I like to do to help them reach lifestyle goals through the practice of yoga and lifestyle coaching. Today, I have a special guest and a friend of mine, Johnny Hyder-Kuhn. He is a queer, vitalistic herbalist, holistic nutritionist, and Kambo practitioner, living in an occupied Arapaho Cheyenne territory, Longmont, Colorado. He specializes in supporting clients navigating the varied impacts of chronic stress and autoimmune conditions with botanical, nutraceuticals, shamanic practices, and dietary protocols. A background in urban farming and lover of the outdoors, Johnny acts as a bridge between plants and humans, seeking to reinvigorate his clients' relationship with nature while empowering them to adopt healthful practices that increase their vitality and improve their quality of life. So here I am, ready to introduce my dear friend, Johnny Hyder-Kuhn. Welcome to Living Healthy, Living Well. I'm so happy to have you
here. Thanks, Madhavi. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really grateful to be here with you. I guess I'll give a little bit of introduction. So I'm a certified clinical herbalist, which means I went to a school program specifically at the Colorado School of Clinical Herbalism. And while I was there, I learned how to become a vitalistic herbalist. And so what that means is that I am really doing my best to work with herbs with people holistically. And so not necessarily always working allopathically with herbs, you know, like this herb for this symptom, but really trying to get to the root of what's causing people discomfort or maybe taking them out of their best quality of life. And so I can talk a little bit more about that here in a moment. But as a vitalistic herbalist, I also work with nutrition. So that was a big part of my training as well. So I'll often, you know, look at people's diet and make recommendations, knowing that food is medicine too. And then I'm also a lineage holder of a jungle medicine that is practiced by the Matses, the jaguar people. It's called Kambo. And so I'm a certified Kambo practitioner as well, which is a little opposite to the vitalistic herbalism, but definitely another medicine that I walk with. So be happy to describe that a little bit more here in a moment too. But I'm residing in occupied Cheyenne and Arapaho land in Colorado, Longmont, Colorado. And there's a great desire and community of herbalists out here and a great desire for herbal practices out here, which is definitely helpful. But now, you know, after COVID, it's been a lot easier to get online and be able to start practicing and seeing people remotely as well, at least for the herbs and nutrition piece. So I've been exploring that as I build my practice right now.
Wow, this is so exciting to hear about all the paths that you have taken with your background and your interests. I really love that. And to be honest with you, what's really intriguing me is that jungle medicine. But yes, we'll definitely get back to that.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. It's pretty interesting.
Tell me a little bit about the herbalist that what you do with, you know, exactly how you take a client through, because you're talking about through taking them to the root of the problem. I like that, you know, no pun intended, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's great. And so really what I do is, you know, I spend a lot of time with my clients, which is great. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Western medicine and I definitely see the value it plays. But, you know, it's kind of funny. Oftentimes people will come and see the herbalist once they've sort of exhausted all of their options, you know, and that's totally valid. So a lot of what I do is working to try to work collaboratively with other systems as well, but also just really act to support my clients and help them come to realizations about their health or adopt new practices that really bring them back to their vitality. So we'll actually start with a 2-hour intake instead of, you know, 7 to 13 minutes, I think we usually get with our doctors. Yeah. So we'll start with a 2-hour intake and that's fact-finding time. So I'm asking lots of questions. There's usually some surveys, maybe some questionnaires as well, where we're getting into what does a normal day look like? What are you eating? You know, and I often tell my clients, there's no judgment, right? We just want to see if it's potato chips, that's fine. If it's salads, that's fine. You know, let's just be honest and let's see, what are you eating throughout the day? And what type of hobbies do you have? What brings you joy? What brings you interest? You know, of course, we'll ask questions on what types of, you know, symptom pictures are there? What types of discomforts are there? And I run through, we do this style of intake where we do OPQRST. So we do onset. We'll ask, you know, when did this thing start happening? We'll do provoke and palliate. Has anything helped it or made it worse? We'll do quality, you know, describe maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, how much pain is there or how does it manifest? Does it radiate anywhere? That's the R. And then let's see, OPQRST. Now I'm kind of forgetting the T is the timing, and then S is severity. So that's sort of like quality, but maybe putting more of that numeric value to it in that case. And then T would be timing. You know, does it happen throughout the day? Does it happen when it's warm? Does it happen when it's cold? Does it happen when you eat something? So that's a way to give me a really good snapshot on what the discomfort is, what the complaint is, and maybe how I can provide some support. And then I'm also asking questions about family history, health history, really just looking at different patterns. If there's any medication, I'm doing a ton of research on the medication. If there's actual diagnoses that have been given to the person, I'm doing research on that as well, which is why my training involved a lot of physiology and pathology as well. So I can't diagnose, treat, or, you know, or prevent disease, but I definitely need to know the language and sort of what to look for. And that's also a safety thing, right? I need to know which herbs or which foods are safe for the person to take too, that there's no contraindications. So that's usually what happens in the first intake. And I ask the client, you know, what are your goals, right? It might just be, I just want to feel like myself again, or I want to reduce this pain from a 10 to a 2, or I want to get my menstrual cycle regulated again so I can, you know, maybe have children. And once we name those goals, I'll go back, do some research, think about what I like to usually do, kind of a near-term, short-term, long-term strategy. So I define near-term as what can we do in the next 2 weeks? Short-term would be what can we do in the next 30 days? And then long term is what's that long haul picture look like? What are we going to slowly work towards and add? So I'm not overwhelming my clients that we're adopting, you know, new strategies in a sustainable way. Because I'm sure, you know, if you're like me, sometimes when you try to do too much at once, it's like, oh, I'm just not going to do any of this. It's too overwhelming. So I try to really work with the client and make sure that they feel empowered to start each thing, you know, in kind of a good pace. And then we'll do follow-up sessions after that. You know, it might be every week, every 2 weeks, once a month, just kind of depends on the level of need. And, you know, part of those check-ins are making sure the formula is working. Are they being held accountable? Also to celebrate stuff, you know, oftentimes when we're not feeling good, it's sometimes hard to to realize when there are changes or to feel like what we're doing is enough. So oftentimes I'm also kind of that, you know, pep talking my clients and saying, no, this is great. Look at these things that you've reported. Let's celebrate that together. This is showing some really good promise. So that's kind of a taste of what I do as an herbalist and a nutritionist. So it's pretty fun.
I love that. And what really resonated with me is the celebrating, because mm-hmm. people are coming to you with something that's troubling them. They're not mm-hmm. feeling good. They don't feel like themselves. So they're kind of coming at a negative mindset, if you will, mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. hope, you know, coming to you with hope. And then you showing them that there are areas that they can celebrate. And mm-hmm. because when you're in such a negative hole, sometimes you don't see that. You're like, oh, there is something to celebrate. I love that. So it's uplifting. Yeah. That really resonated with me because sometimes we don't think about that.
Absolutely. And
yeah. Something else I noticed with your process is not a one size fits all, you know, mm-hmm. so leading to all your clients to success one step at a time, you know, baby mm-hmm. steps make big changes later. Mm-hmm. And that's the celebration. That's beautiful. I mean,
thank you.
So, yeah. So since I know you, I'm just going to bring this up here. Uh-huh. I know you have a garden and then you were growing your own herbs for a while mm-hmm. in that area. And then you still are, and you're mm-hmm. creating your own tinctures. And so mm-hmm. this is part of your practice, right? With your clients sharing. Uh-huh. Could you share a little bit about that? What a tincture and what is all that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess maybe even stepping back a little bit, I really see my ultimate role as an herbalist as being a bridge between plants and people. And I think too, with that, whether it shows up as food or nutraceuticals or tinctures or teas or other types of what we might call earth medicines, it's kind of to help reinvigorate a relationship, right? Like I see these plants and these what I still call earth medicines, right? I really try to, you know, I understand that can be a loaded term with big pharma kind of having a monopoly on that word, but they really are. They're our original medicines. And when we work with them, we're in relationship with them. And I see so much of the issues that people have as maybe the root cause being a dysregulated or an imbalanced relationship with the natural world. So for me, in my path and my healing, part of rebuilding my relationship with the natural world was to start growing plants. And for a long time, my husband and I, we were renting an acre property and we were farming it. We had a concept called urban soil farm, like H-E-R-B-N, urban soil farm. And we were growing a ton of medicine plants, food and flowers. And the experience of starting a plant from seed, watching it grow, you know, we grew everything from seed, creating the environment that it needs to thrive, and then going out and spending time with it, sitting with it, that alone can be medicinal. And when you start to just pay attention to the world around you and start connecting with the plants, something comes up, something comes alive within people. And, you know, when we would actually get help on the farm too for weeding and all the labor, you know, we just needed help. But afterwards, people would come up to us and say, Johnny, like, you know, I'm struggling with XYZ and, or dealing with, you know, the pandemic and all the anxiety that comes with it. And coming to the farm and getting my hands in the soil and sitting with the plants and working with it really helped. And that kind of started turning a light bulb on for me, like, oh, that's a piece of it too, not just the clinical side, but actually being with the plants, whether it's a nature walk or whether it's empowering people to grow plants at any scale, no matter how much space you have, if it's a corner for a little plant rack or a garden bed or an acre, right? At any space we can cultivate plants. So then for the herbs, I take it a next step, and my process of extracting herbs into a tincture, which is essentially, I make hydroethanolic tinctures. So that means I'm combining alcohol and water, and that's my solvent or my menstrua. And I use that to extract the constituents that are active out of the plants into liquid form. And then that's just another way of getting herbs into the system. And often, you know, you can just take a few drops or a few milliliters of something and get the equivalent of drinking, you know, a few cups of really strong tea. So what I'll do is actually sit with the plant, ask for permission to harvest. It's really amazing when you start cultivating this relationship with plants, you start to notice how they communicate with us, you know? And I mean, they give us our breath. We've evolved out of nature. So there's, you know, this opportunity to connect with the electromagnetic fields that we can pick up with on our heart. So there's a lot of opportunity to just get out of this logic brain and sit with the plants and notice how they communicate with us. And you actually ask permission, is now it, can I harvest? Sometimes there's a why, what are you looking for? Sometimes there's no, mm-hmm. and there's a reason why, right? Like one time I wanted to harvest one of my herbs and it was like, nope, no way, no way. And this was our final season before we moved. And I came back out to it and I realized why, because it wanted me to wait so I could take its seeds and plant it at my new home. Oh. Right. It was like, you don't need to tincture me right now. You need to wait for me to come into seed. So there's usually a reason why, or maybe I'm out wild harvesting and I hear no. And then you keep walking and realize the reason why is because there's a much larger stand that you can ethically wild harvest up around the corner. So when we listen to this, that also develops a deeper relationship with the medicine we're making. And then we go into the extraction. So harvesting the plant, chopping it up, mixing the menstrua, and then I do macerations with fresh plants. So you're soaking it in a jar for usually a few weeks, and then pressing it, filtering it, and bottling it. And then now you have a tincture. And from there, I'll blend different tinctures, whether or not I make them, into formulas for my clients. So a long journey, but that's sort of the whole thing.
I love that. I really love that. And then yes, us connecting with the plants, connecting mm-hmm. with the earth, mm-hmm. the energy, the electromagnetic, you know, energy, it all makes sense to me, being a yoga teacher mm-hmm. and all that. I can 100% connect it, walking in your garden barefoot, connecting, yes. feeling grounded, because we're all one, we're all sharing the energy. They're mm-hmm. breathing the air that we're breathing out, and they're giving mm-hmm. us the breath that, you know, the air that we need to breathe in. So,
yes.
So I totally understand, and I'm connect with what you're saying literally and figuratively for sure.
That's
beautiful. And I love the story about, no, you're not harvesting me. I'm coming with you so that you can plant more. I love that. That's beautiful.
So that's pretty cool.
so connecting with the root chakra right there, walking barefoot, mm-hmm. you know, in your garden and in your grass, huge connection that mm-hmm. I see that and feel that. And coming back to the heart chakra, because you and I were talking about that after a yoga uh-huh. session one day, and it kind of resonated with you, like, wait a minute, this is
yes.
what you were thinking as well. So share a little bit of that with me as well.
Sure. Yeah. So I think when I think about the Anahata chakra, I think that's been the one for me that I've often had to do a lot of the most of my work with. Definitely other chakras, especially around grounding. I maybe all too easily focus on the upper chakras and can get lost in my mind and can easily journey just sitting on the couch through my consciousness. But what really tickles me about the heart chakra is that it acts also as kind of this bridge. You know, we talked about this concept of the herbalist as the bridge between the plants and the humans. And to me, the heart is also the bridge between the realms of the body and the realms of the mind. And also I find that I struggled throughout my life with having boundaries, with having healthy boundaries. And I wasn't necessarily always modeled what that looked like growing up. And so it really took me along a lot of therapy and a lot of herbs and a lot of yoga to really kind of understand what it means to have healthy boundaries. And that to me connects back to this heart chakra, because perhaps in the past I felt like having an open heart led to me being maybe a little too porous and just oversharing or over connecting or over committing to things and not taking care of myself. And I've since learned that having healthy boundaries means that you can still walk with an open heart and you can share your heart, you can share your passion, you can connect with people, but it also means that you're taking care of your needs and yourself yes. and your emotional capacity to give or to receive. And so I think I've sort of found that, you know, also often when people are dealing with a lot of stress or anxiety or depression, oftentimes we think the most about the nervous system clinically and how it expresses through that. But there also tends to be this pain in the heart. Or I know when I spent the last 10 or 11 years carrying around a pretty gnarly emotional trauma that had happened to me. And it hurt in my heart. There was a lot of pain in there. Yeah. And through working with different plant medicines, I came to learn that not only to be able to eventually release it, which I actually was able to through working with Cambo, but also to really understand that, yes, there's pain and stuff that can hurt in the heart. There's also this massive, infinite capacity to feel joy and to feel the diversity of what love is and to feel all these other emotions when we expand that heart. And then I kind of started connecting pieces that, wow, a lot of the work I'm doing with herbalism and with Cambo has been connecting back to rooting in the heart, anchoring in the heart, opening the heart, clearing the heart, and walking forward and leading with the heart. And when that happens, suddenly you can attract other people that prioritize their health, or feel like you can connect more empathically to the emotions of others, or notice the natural world around you and get out of the looping thoughts, you know, a little more easily, and dropping into a space of knowing through intuition, and you know, turning up the volume on that inner guiding voice, or being able to make decisions a little with more discernment, and being able to speak your truth, you know, and maybe that connects to some other chakras, but I feel like there's an element of keeping your heart open and feeling empowered to speak your truth, and also to be able to share and receive love. How that manifests. So when I started doing that work on myself, a lot of stuff changed. And I started noticing with a lot of my clients that there was often so many of us throughout our life, we build barriers and we close our heart off and we overprotect, or we do things because there's a lot of pain in there and we sort of instinctively do stuff to protect. And then what that ends up doing is really closing us off from a lot. So what can we do to realign with the patterns of nature that wants us to live openly, that wants us to give and receive and to experience joy? So what does that look like?
Oh, wow. Oh, that's amazing. I love what you have found. And I love how you recognize that you didn't have boundaries. Like many of us don't have boundaries. And that's what's causing us to get into these situations, because we're just continuously giving, giving, giving until there's nothing left within us to give. Absolutely. So filling up your cupboard first with your energy. And then I love how you mentioned walking forward with your proud chest, meaning open heart chakra, and attracting the people, like-minded people, because you're resonating that energy. And that's definitely a game changer, right? I see that.
Yeah, absolutely. If I think physically too, we might've talked about this in the past, but one of my herbalist friends, who's also a nurse, she reminded me that the first cells that are created in an embryo are cardiac cells.
Yes, absolutely.
That's wild. That just blows my mind. It's like, truly, you know, we focus so much on the brain and like the brain is calling the shots, but like the heart is sort of the first to form, and everything seems to branch out from that.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Well, the heartbeat is the first thing that you see in an ultrasound to recognize that there is a living being in you. So yeah, so it makes sense. And that's true. So it's the first chakra that's created. I love that. I love that. That's a beautiful story. And it's true. We must fill ourselves up first, and we must create boundaries. It doesn't mean that we're selfish. We're being selfless. Absolutely. We have to And then the perception, I noticed that you said your perception changed. And that's mm-hmm. another problem. A lot of us have this fog right in front of us, or, you know, mm-hmm. blur. We need to wipe mm-hmm. our glasses with the special, you know, cloth that wipes our glasses, right? Where we can't see because we haven't opened it. And then that perception mm-hmm. is skewed. And when you can figure out what it is that your body needs, your mental and physical and emotional needs, then you can actually open yourself up and see and look for exactly what you're looking for. And it comes, it's there. The universe answers to you when you put it out there without confusing it. And the boundaries Absolutely. Are what confuse it, right? I feel like.
Yes.
Yeah. We're throwing
yeah, it's true. Or if we're too rigid too, right? It's like, Absolutely. Then it kind of just keeps the energy circulating inside. I think that's another component of, you know, one of my shadow expressions is rumination. Mm-hmm. Because I connect a lot with my thoughts and my thinking, I can tend to ruminate on things. Mm-hmm. But I've also noticed the more I've connected with my heart, the less I've ruminated, because I'm extending that connection outward a little bit more. And, you know, maybe I've throughout my life, you know, had some pretty decent empathy and intuition, but I definitely have had to strengthen that almost like an energetic muscle throughout my life. But there is this kind of thing that happens where, you know, there was a part of my life when I was in this dark place where no matter where I was just kind of thinking about myself and my issues and my things and just like spinning all the time. But when you drop into your heart space, you can also, like, you know, again, you can go into a crowd or go spend time with loved ones or whatever, and you start to feel them a little bit more. You connect, you intuitively pick up on, you know, the nuances on how people are showing up themselves. And, you know, I've definitely learned to not just feel like I need to, oh, you know, like make sure everyone's okay all the time, but just to be able to kind of notice and like find harmony, right? Find this harmony again with our fellow humans, which I think so much right now, while the world is changing so much and there's just so much anger and division and judgment and resentment that's gotten worse. I didn't think it was possible to get worse, Madhavi. And then the last yeah. couple of years, it's just, it breaks my heart just to see how difficult it is for people to remember the commonality that all humans truly share. Yeah. And to be able, the frequency with which people so easily ignore their heart space and get into these narratives, right, that might be coming from algorithms or different places, right, without getting too into the weeds. But it really makes me sad to see that, you know, with that too, I think everyone's been sort of forced into this kind of survival mode, this feeling of survival mode, especially at the beginning of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's really hard to drop into your heart chakra and stay out of your fear-based when you're forced into survival mode. But what maybe I'll ask you, what is it going to take to get more people to find alignment again and open anahata? More yoga?
More yoga. Yeah, of course, you know, I would say that. Just need to mainly, you know, people actually are afraid. That's the problem. When your anahata chakra, your heart chakra is closed, they're afraid to sit with themselves. You don't have to do, you know, a yoga pose. You don't have to sit in a dark cave and meditate. You can just sit in silence mm-hmm. and just allow your thoughts to flow through mm-hmm. and allow them to flow through without any judgment or connection. Just let them flow mm-hmm. and just be silent and not be afraid of the cobwebs or the junk in the back of your closet, I call it, you know, you know, when nobody wants to go clean out their closet, how boring, or their attic, mm-hmm. but you know, meditation is the garbage disposal of the subconscious mind, but we don't mm-hmm. have to call it meditation. We don't have to, you can just make it as simple as just sitting and breathing for 1 or 2 mm-hmm. minutes, taking that time to just disconnect from all the noises mm-hmm. in the world. But, you know, I would highly recommend coming to a yoga class. I've always all of that.
Of course.
But it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone, sure. For sure. But honestly, at the end of the day, it's just taking time to sit and mm-hmm. just breathe and just disconnect, mm-hmm. you know, and that really helps just a little bit every day.
For sure.
But it is sad. It's sad. And people don't realize that we all are connected by gossamers of thread. At the end of the day, all our energies are connected. And that's why this pandemic has made people so afraid, because we lost connection with one another for a long time. Our primary food, and I'm sure you agree, is human connection. It's not literally the food we eat. It's the human connection. Otherwise we'd be eating 24/7, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm an extrovert too. So of course I love connecting with people and finding things to connect on. And I feel so comfortable talking with, you know, I would say most people, right? There's always, again, that boundary thing. Sometimes if I'm feeling a strange energy and I kind of recognize maybe this isn't a person I want to connect with, I notice that a lot more, but I really feel comfortable talking with other people. So maybe some introverts would have something else to say, but maybe I'll throw out there, at the beginning of the pandemic, that was also my biggest challenge as an extrovert. I really felt that suddenly I was forced to not be able to go out and connect with people regularly. And that was really startling realization early on. And it forced me to understand, wait, it's okay to just kind of stay home and cultivate and be with my honey and be with the plants and be quiet. And all my introvert friends are like, this is great. I love this. And I was just like, okay, that's I'm learning how to do this a little bit more.
And then we discovered Zoom.
And we discovered Zoom, right?
At the end of the day, human race will prevail. We will figure something out because, again, that connection is so important. We were starving, so we found a way to connect, however it was, you know, FaceTime, Zoom, whatever technology we had. Thank goodness for that.
Absolutely.
But coming back, because in your story about opening your heart chakra, and then again, my curiosity has piqued again, your jungle medicine. Share that.
Sure.
Yeah, share a little bit about your Kembo practice. What is it and why? And yeah, just.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to chat about that. So Kembo is a frog, Phyllomedusa bicolor is its Latin name, which I love, because if you look at its genera, Phyllomedusa, we think about Medusa is, you know, one of the deities in Greek mythology, and gets a lot of bad rap of being, you know, the snake hair and turns men into stone. But if you take a step back, you realize she's a protector, right? So its name literally translates to leaf protector, and bicolor because it has two different colors of its skin. But its common name is the giant monkey tree frog, or the waxy tree frog. And these frogs are very large, as the name implies. And it creates this waxy secretion, which is on one part used as a defense strategy, and also it's understood to protect its skin against the sun, since it lives in the high canopy of the trees in the Amazon. And this waxy secretion actually contains a cocktail of bioactive neuropeptides, which are these molecules that are made of amino acids, which are the same building blocks to proteins. And, you know, many moons ago, there's a folk legend that a tribe in the Amazon got really sick. It's suspected possibly Spanish flu or some type of sickness that came from outside of the jungle, we'll just say. And the shaman named Kampu went into the forest, sat with grandmother ayahuasca, drank it for to receive a message on what to do, and received a vision on how to call this specific frog, how to gently harvest its secretion without harming the frog, and how to apply it. And then the legend goes he brought the medicine back to his tribe and healed it, and it began to spread throughout the Amazon basin. So traditionally, this medicine is used what's called to clear panema, which is described as depression, laziness, listlessness. You know, maybe in the jungle traditions, it's someone who's not having luck hunting or finding a wife or a partner, or having kids, or not really contributing to the jungle, right? Very different context. It is also used by the hunters to sort of reduce the human scent and sharpen the vision. But it's become really popular in the West as more people have traveled down to South America and worked with tribes with various medicines. It's become interesting and popular. And since then, several organizations have begun training people in the lineage on how to work with this medicine. So myself, I felt a particular calling even long before I became an herbalist for about 11 years. And it felt interesting because I recognize that there's a big conversation around, you know, Westerners working with South American medicines to begin with. And, you know, there's just a big conversation on sensitivity, on reciprocity, the need for reciprocity, which doesn't always happen when we're working with these types of medicines. And so I sort of shelved that for a long time. And then an opportunity came about last year to go back to where I grew up at the base of my birth mountain, and train with a man who had lived with the Matses for many years and lived in the jungle for many years, and was teaching people how to work with Kembo safely and traditionally. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty intense. You know, again, I mentioned with herbalism as a vitalist, we're kind of gently nourishing and finding the energetic match to sort of connect the pieces and bring someone's vitality back into harmony. This one's very strong purgative remedy. So what we do is we take the secretions that are dried on a stick and we mix it with the recipient's saliva. And we actually make these small surface blisters in the skin with the tip of a burnt vine. And within the burns, we apply the sort of pasty, waxy secretion mixed with saliva. We set a timer for 10 minutes or for 20 minutes and are monitoring. So what happens within a few seconds to a couple minutes is the peptides create a whole physiological reaction in the body where suddenly the heart rate goes up, all the vessels open up, you get really hot and red, your head starts pounding, and it causes movement through your gallbladder, your pancreas, your stomach, your bowels. And so for many people, it causes a vomiting violent purge. It might cause a bottom purge. It might cause you to sweat. Suddenly your blood pressure can drop as well. And so sometimes people might faint. And so my role as a practitioner is to not only keep the person safe, make sure there's no contraindications before mm-hmm. I serve them, but to create a safe container for the experience. So the medical community thinks this is crazy, that there's no medicinal value because no journals will give grant money to do human clinical trials on it. But the people that have studied and worked with it have found a lot of promise energetically and physically. So it's pretty interesting that people will actually sign up to be envenomated and go through this really strong purge, but typically people will go through 3 sessions within a lunar cycle. And I can speak for myself that I noticed my blood pressure went from being borderline to being in normal ranges. I finally was able to let go of the pain of this trauma. No matter, you know, I did years of therapy, years of medicine work, years of work with shamans, a bunch of different stuff. And it helped me cope, but it never really took the pain away. And finally, I was able to just let it fully get out of my body and move through. So that's where a lot of the promise of Kembo is helping move trauma up and out of the body, which means I'm on this path of becoming more and more trauma-informed, understanding how to navigate grief with people. Mm-hmm. But if I look at the anecdotes of what people report the effects have on them, and I think about my training as in physiology, I start to realize that part of what it's doing is regulating the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal cortex, which are the 3 glands that are directly involved with managing the stress response. Yeah. And so that's another reason why I work with Kembo, is my focus is largely on helping clients manage and deal with the impacts of chronic stress, which we know can come up as muscle tension and emotional imbalance and sleeping issues and sexuality issues, gut issues, systemic inflammation, right? There's all these things that can happen. Mm-hmm. And even though Kembo is not for everyone, And it can be dangerous if there's cardiovascular issues or like, you know, psychosis. And, you know, we definitely screen for a bunch of different conditions to make sure it's a safe option and it's not completely without risk. But it can be a really useful medicine to incorporate into one's ability to change their relationship to how stress shows up in the body. Wow. So, yeah. So it's pretty interesting. And sometimes when I tell people what I do, they're like, that sounds crazy. And I told my friend's son, and he goes, so you're people pay you to poison them with frog venom. I'm like, yeah, if you say it like that, it sounds kind of silly. And it's becoming really popular right now because it also has been found to increase lymphatic activity and increase the immune system as well. So a lot of people are gravitating towards it for that reason. Mm-hmm. But you know, the way I also say it, I'll kind of end with this is, oftentimes people are carrying around stuff that really sucks for most of their life. And, 3 20-minute sessions that really suck that can, for many, help relieve that burden or change their relationship to it, or give them an ability to see a roadmap on how to transform whatever that thing is. To me is worth it. So, you know, it doesn't create hallucinations or a psychedelic experience, but when you work with this medicine, it scans your body, you can sense it, you know, it communicates with you and it sort of goes where it's needed. So it's really fascinating. It blows my mind, and I'm just a year into working with it. But I think being able to offer that, you know, sometimes I have herb clients that eventually once their vitality is a little stronger, they'll work with Kembo. And I've even had a couple clients that I serve Kembo, and then now we're doing nutritional and herbal long-term stuff too. So I'm really feel a lot of honor to work with it. So
That is incredible. Wow. I never really asked you all that. And so this was my first time really listening to the deep science and even the history of where it came from, et cetera. So that's really cool. I mean,
thank you.
Yes. I like it. 60 minutes of feeling yucky versus a lifetime of dragging around this trauma, stress that shows up in your physical body. And you're not living, you know, a peaceful and healthy life. And so totally, for sure. Well, absolutely. I'm really glad that you found something that's worked for you. And, you know, usually that's what we do, whatever we've experienced and whatever's worked for us as healers, we love to share it with others. And, and between your Kembo and your herbalist, you know, background and all the stuff that you've done, definitely your it's just incredible healing, sharing what has worked for you. That's what we all need to do. Just tell me, where can people find you if they want to learn more about your herbal background or even your Kembo practice? They have to come out there, I guess, to do that, or will you come to them? That's the question.
Yeah, for Kembo, I will travel. You know, if it's like flying travel, I would just have to kind of discuss, you know, I serve people one at a time. I don't do groups. However, if a group is interested, I would fly out, you know, as long as they're covering my travel as well. But I would fly out and serve people one at a time. But typically, you know, I'm mostly just serving people wherever I am. It's something I can travel with, right? It's legal. Right. So I'm able to fly around with it. If I'm, you know, in other states, sometimes I'll advertise, but for now, largely just service in Colorado. So, but I am really close to finishing my website, but my website, my business name is Heart Alchemy Integrative Wellness, LLC, and which I started with my business partner, Michaela. And our website is heartalchemywellness.com. So it should be soon. It should be ready pretty soon. I'm thinking maybe in the next 3 weeks or so. But we'll see. And I'm really just trying to take my time with it. So once that's ready, we'll be able to get online. fill out paperwork and apply if they're interested in working with me with herbs or nutrition or Cambo or all three. Mm-hmm. They can schedule a discovery call with me. I always like to meet people and just kind of see where they're at and get the elevator pitch on what they're dealing with. And then that's where they can also, you know, book sessions with me as well.
So, excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Well, I, for one, can say that your herbalism background, nutrition has really helped me. I am one of Johnny's clients, you know, struggling with my own little chemical imbalances, et cetera. And all the things that he's helped me with have definitely made some shifts in my life and my perspective and in my body and mind. So I appreciate everything that you've done for me. And I'm sure everybody else that you're working with do too. So thank you so much for your time and all this wonderful information, this wealth of information, another
absolutely
to look at that's offered that, you know, we have to offer out there. And I will have all of your information in the show notes as well, so great that people can get in touch with you. But anyways, thank you so much for valuable Melody time and valuable knowledge. I really appreciate all of that.
Yeah, it was really great to chat with you. I appreciate you for having me.
Yeah. Well, take care and hope to have you on the show again later.
Great. Sounds good. I would love that.
Once you're all going and getting up and going. All right. Okay. Until then, take care and bye for now.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Living Healthy, Living Well podcast. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you won't miss upcoming episodes. If you would like to get more tips and tricks on how to live a healthy lifestyle, ask to join my private Facebook group, Living Healthy, Living Well. Answer the 3 questions, follow the rules to be let into the group. If you want to learn more about my weekly yoga sessions and group coaching sessions, visit www.pranahealthpc.com for more information. I also will have all of these links in the show notes. Until next time, live healthy and live well.